This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Donovan, wrote several folk rock hippie anthems of the 60s, like Catch the Wind, Sunshine Superman, Mellow Yellow, Wear Your Love Like Heaven, and The Hurdy-Gurdy Man. Although that description may make him sound dated, the fact is you can hear the influence of his singing on many performers today, including Belle and Sebastian. Donovan, who wrote I Love My Shirt, had his song Mellow Yellow used in a Gap campaign about 4 years ago. When he first started recording, he was sometimes called Britain's answer to Bob Dylan. After experiencing fame, in the 70s he retreated to a more secluded life, but continued to record every few years. Now he has his first new CD in 8 years. It's called Beat Cafe. Let's start with the title track. Donovan, welcome to Fresh Air.
Well, thank you.
Donovan, you were born in Scotland, and at about the age of 10, your family moved to London. How old were you when you actually started to perform?
Well, my father tells me, in Glasgow, where I spent the first 10 years of my life, that at the age of 5, I was at a Robert Burns evening, and a blind pianist played There Was an Old Lady Who Swallowed a Fly, the Burl Ives single, and I performed it, and I'd memorized every line. So it seems I began performing at 5 or 6.
And when you got to England, did you start playing with bands then? Like, what was your first incarnation on stage?
When I arrived in England at the age of 10, I was just reaching my adolescence, and 2 years later, very quickly, I started listening to Everly Brothers and Buddy Holly. I was a bit too young for Elvis, actually. And then when I went to college, about 15, I started listening to Woody Guthrie and Jack Elliott and Pete Seeger and Joan Baez, and I was fully fired to adopt all the folk songs I could. And then I hitchhiked away from home. I left the college disillusioned. So I joined Bohemia. And my first performances, Terry, were on beaches and on street corners, busking. And so I travelled. But very soon, and very quickly, I was discovered, and I was on television.
Yeah, you were on the program Ready, Steady, Go, which was kind of, I guess, similar to like Shindig and Hullabaloo in the States. It was a show that featured, you know, hits of the day, and I think there were dancers on it, too.
That's right, Ready, Steady, Go. The weekend begins here, Friday, on one night, overnight. All over Britain, one artist would appear and be known as a household name thereafter, and that was me.
Now, after you did Ready, Steady, Go, you recorded a couple of demo versions, not of your songs, but of other people's songs. You did a demo of a Buffy St. Marie song called Codeine, and a song by Tim Harden called London Town. Why were those demos to show how you could sing? Was that the point of them? To interest a record company?
Well, in actual fact, the recordings you speak of have just been found in my archive, and I call it 64, available on my website, that we discovered these recordings and found that they were made before the television shows.
Oh.
They were made my first appearance in Tin Pan Alley in London, and so these were the first test recordings in a publishing company called Southern Music, now Peer Music. So I walked into a publishing house and recorded 9, what we call demos, and those were the songs that got me the publishing deal. So I recorded these songs just as if they were my repertoire of the day.
Well, why don't we hear one of them? Because these are actually both included on an anthology of your work called Troubadour, the Definitive Collection. So how about we hear Codeine, your version of a Buffy St. Marie song? Sound good?
Oh, Buffy would be wonderful to play right now. She is a marvel, and I loved recording her songs.
Okay, so here's Donovan, his very first recording. It's called Codeine, written by Buffy St. Marie.
In my belly's craving, I got shaking in my head. I feel like I'm dying, and I wish I were dead. If I live till tomorrow, it's gonna be a long time. For I'll reel and I'll fall and rise on codeine. And it's real, and it's real one more time. When I was a young man, I learned not to care. What whiskey in front of it, I often did swear. My mother and father said whiskey's a curse, but the fate of their baby is many times worse. And it's real, and it's a real one more time.
That's Donovan, recorded in 1964, a demo recording, his version of a song by Buffy St. Marie. So you were pretty kind of folk-oriented at the very start. How did that start to change?
Well, you can hear in my guitar playing that I'm reaching beyond the folk scene. Although I'd begun performing as a folk singer, I was biting into the guitar with my guitar pick, and I didn't realize at first, but what I was trying to do was come up with a kind of a Celtic rock, a kind of a fusion where the pop sensibilities and the blues and jazz as well, I could blend into my folk style. At the same time, I was also writing, of course, poetry. An enormous amount of songs started pouring out, and the jazz that I was listening to in college, Miles Davis and Charlie Parker, and essentially Billie Holiday from the jazz world, and the classical music, and the Beatles, and the Rolling Stones, and when Hendrix came along, listening to Jimmy. And the change was not sit down and write a Sunshine Superman album, but out of my songs, I met a producer called Mickey Most, and John Cameron was the arranger. And we began to make that album, Sunshine Superman, which was so eclectic and so experimental, and at least a year and a half before Sgt. Pepper.
Well, since you've just mentioned Sunshine Superman, why don't we hear it? And this is your recording from 1966.
Sunshine came softly through my window today. Could have tripped out easy, but I changed my way. It'll take time, I know it, but in a while you're gonna be mine, I know it. We're doing it in style, 'cause I'm
That's Donovan, recorded in 1966. I have a very profound question for you, and that is, where did you get your clothes in the 60s when you were on TV and radio and touring all the time?
We used to go down to the vintage, what you call vintage clothes shops, and it was Portobello Road, and Brian Jones, who invented the Rolling Stones, was the first to raid the old velvets and the feathered boas and the, and the corduroy jackets and the clothes from a bygone age. But all of us came out of art school, so we were very into the image. And so The Who would dress up in pop art with Targets and Union Jacks. They'd get their clothes made out of flags. Because what the art students are wearing this year, probably a lot of young people will be wearing next year.
I'm just mad about saffron. Well, saffron's mad about me. I'm just mad about saffron. She's just mad about me. They call me mellow yellow, quite rightly. They call me mellow yellow, quite rightly. They call me mellow yellow. I'm just mad about 14. 14's mad about me.
Now, I should apologize in advance for asking you a question you've probably been asked more times than you could care to count. Your song, Mellow Yellow, which was a big hit in 1966, a lot of people assumed that that was about getting high by smoking banana peels. What was the song about?
You know, it was about being mellow. The color saffron is the color of the Buddhist robe, the color saffron. But the name saffron was a girl as well. There's multiple meanings in many songs. But being mellow and laid back is very much a jazz phrase. It, you know, be cool, man. You know, don't be so hassle. Just lay back. Could be mellow. But the reference to smoking bananas completely shocked us all at the time. Wonder where anybody got that idea. You can't get high smoking banana peels.
I guess it's then, the line, electric banana.
Well, the smoking of the peels, I didn't realize why that had been so tied with my song until 2 or 3 years ago. I was in Cleveland in the Rock and Roll Museum, and I was sitting next to Country Joe McDonald, and we started talking. And Joe said to me, "Hey, man, by the way, it was me." I said, "What do you mean it was you?" "Mellow Yellow, man. And the, you know, the bananas, smoking bananas." I said, "Joe, I got a feeling that I'm not going to like what you're going to tell me here." "Tell me." He said, "Well, man, in San Francisco, 1966, what we thought was we'd put the band on the back of the truck and we'd go down to an old yard I know, and it has all these carnival floats that they threw away, and we found this giant banana, and we put it on the truck. We started up the band. We drove down through Haight Ashbury, playing the music, advertising a gig. But just to make sure the people knew we were coming, we announced to the press that you can get high smoking bananas." And he said, "That would have been the end of it. But that Friday, you released the single, Mellow Yellow."
Uh-huh.
I said, "Joe, thanks, because I've been asked for 35 years. Why do you say you can get high smoking bananas? Because I guess millions tried it, Terry."
That's a great story.
Electric banana is gonna be a sudden craze. They call me mellow yellow, quite rightly. They call me mellow yellow.
That's Donovan, recorded in 1966. He has a new CD, and it's called Beat Cafe. I'm so glad you told the story behind that. That clears up that clears up a lot of issues. One of the things you have the distinction of is being the first British pop musician to be busted for smoking marijuana. This was in 1966, which was the same year as Mellow Yellow. What were the circumstances?
Victimization by the drug squad in the establishment to try to stop the free flow of ideas coming through the new revolutionary pop groups, Beatles included, the Rolling Stones. They busted me because I think they thought, well, we'll get him first. And then we'll get the Stones and the Beatles, and then we'll go on to the other ones. And that was so. But it was very clear in the press and to all my friends that it was definitely a victimization. I was fined. I wasn't put in jail. And I was given a caution that I was a voice of youth and that I must take responsibility.
The truth is, the following year in 67, you renounced drugs and urged your fans to do the same. And you had turned to meditation and hoped your fans would do the same. Did that renunciation have anything to do with the judge's sentiments that you should become a better role model? And if not, what changed in your life that made you want to give up drugs?
No, it was nothing to do with being busted. I continued to smoke after I got busted. I've never considered it to be an unhealthful thing, but I don't promote it. And the giving up of drugs in 67 was this. The reason was this. When the Beatles and I realized that millions of young people were thinking that we were promoting it, when it's truly a subjective use, I mean, anything that is harmful, and there's lots, tobacco and alcohol and overeating and, oh God, there's this enormous amount of things that are bad for you. If the millions of young people thought we were promoting it, something was wrong. We had to make a stand. And so we went to the East. We were looking for a reason and the cause of suffering. And it was nothing to do with drugs. In fact, sacred plants, I would prefer to call them. Out of the inner psyche of the human race comes all the disasters and all the problems. So only meditation and the inner journey. Could we go in, we asked ourselves, and find out if the origins of suffering originate within us? And so I don't know what the Beatles said, but I said, stop, try meditation. Stop taking the sacred plants. So that's the reason.
You actually went with the Beatles to India to study with the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. You went all together, right?
That's right. When we arrived there, we were also with Mike Love of the Beach Boys, and Mia Farrow came a little later, and Paul Horn, the jazz flautist.
Mm-hmm. Did the fact that it was this kind of big celebrity gathering affect the actual learning? In other words, I don't know, everybody around the world was interested in the fact that you all were doing this. I don't know if there was a lot of press attention or a lot of just kind of tension within the group because you were at such a kind of high point of your careers and were such lightning rods.
Oh, it was absolutely, no, you're quite right. It was absolutely an outrage to our management and the industry and the press and the media of the world followed us and camped outside the ashram. It was extraordinary. We had to have the local army sort of get to stop them breaking in through the, to try and ask us why were we there, and we just said, go away, we're here to meditate. And finally they slowly went away, and the celebrity aspect was very high, of course. But we got down to some serious meditation.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Donovan. He wrote and performed several hippie folk rock anthems of the 60s, like Wear Your Love Like Heaven, Catch the Wind, Sunshine Superman, and Mellow Yellow. He has his first new CD in 8 years. It's called Beat Cafe. He brought his guitar to the studio, and I asked him to play one of the songs he's famous for.
Thrown like a star in my vast sleep, I open my eyes to take a peep, to find that I was by the sea, gazing with tranquility. 'Tis then when the hurdy-gurdy man comes singing the songs of love. Then when the hurdy-gurdy man come singing the songs of love. Hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy-gurdy, he sang. Hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy-gurdy, he sang. Hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy-gurdy, he sang. Ah, histories of ages past, unenlightened, the shadows cast down through all eternity, the crying of humanity. 'Tis then when the hurdy-gurdy man comes singing the songs of love. Then when the hurdy-gurdy man, he comes singing the songs of love. Beatles were hurdy-gurdy men, they come singing your songs of love. I am the hurdy-gurdy man, I come singing your songs of love. Hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy-gurdy, he sang. Hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy, hurdy-gurdy-gurdy, he sang.
Well, thanks for doing that. That's Donovan performing one of his songs from, was it the late 60s?
Yeah, that came from the Hurdy-Gurdy Man album in 68.
Good. Where exactly were you, or what? I know you were in India and studying meditation, but when you wrote Hurdy-Gurdy Man, was there something very specific that precipitated the song?
Well, I was in India, and I was playing guitar with George Harrison in the ashram in Rishikesh, and I'd been developing some ideas of this song, Hurdy-Gurdy Man, and George gave me a dambura, which is the drone instrument in the Indian ensemble. And that's on the Hurdy-Gurdy Man song now, because he gave it to me and I took it back to London and recorded it. The ideas in Hurdy-Gurdy Man come from an amalgamation of and an absorption of so many ideas from spiritual books, and in particular the Diamond Sutra. And speaking of Celtic mythology also, that the bardic Celtic tradition.
You know, I think that that is your most imitated and caricatured songs. Like when people wanted to do a Donovan impression, and when you're famous, that's what people do. They do impressions of you. That's the song I think that they would often choose because of the shake in your voice on that song.
Well, Hurdy-Gurdy Man, to be re-recorded by others, is wonderful because of the lyrical message. But Season of the Witch, another song of mine, seems to have been adopted again and again and again by so many bands because it makes them feel good when they play. And Led Zeppelin used to use my song Season of the Witch to warm up every rehearsal before every performance, so Jimmy Page tells me.
Interesting. Do you know why?
It's just two extraordinary chords, A7th and D9th, and it's funny.
Would you just play those chords so we can hear them?
Yeah, I can play them. When we first start playing guitar, when you're a young musician, you get hooked on a phrase or a musical phrase or a set of chords, and this is the set. Now, when you're a young band, and you start playing this, then you realize you're still playing it about 2 hours later. Something must be good about these two chords. But it also allows you to play many different things when you're just vamping and jamming on these two chords. Americans also have recorded it. Dr. John has recorded it for that movie Blues Brothers 2. And also, the Allman Brothers, I think, did my song The Mountain. But it was Al Cooper and Stephen Stills recorded it as well.
Right.
But it's a spooky song, and it actually spoke about being busted before I was busted. One of those prophetic things.
Oh, no! Must be the season of the Must be the season of the witch. Must be the season of the witch.
And That now, was Season of the Witch.
Had you heard those two chords together in other songs, or did you hear something in those two chords that inspired you to put them together?
This chord, the D ninth, I'd heard from Bert Jansch. Now, it's a very important chord in the world of folk blues and jazz because there's many songs that use it by going, here's the D ninth. So it's part of the traditions of jazz and blues. There is a house in New Orleans. It's in there. It's also in Hit the Road, Jack. Don't you come back no more, no more, no. It's in many of the blues progressions. And, hey. So it actually is a very established emotional chord in many blues, yeah.
Well, Donovan, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Donovan's new CD is called Beat Cafe.